Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All tied, all the time. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday, and at least for the first several minutes of this program, like literally every big story that's important to me right now, almost every big story in college football today, this morning, was coming out of Tuscaloosa, including, and I would like to start by lighting a candle and saluting Nick Saban. He has been named the winner of the Bear Bryant Coach of the Year Award for the 2020 season. It was given out for the first time in 1986, and in the 35-year history, Nick Saban has already won the Bear Bryant Award, the Coach of the Year Award, one time. He did that in 2003 while he was at LSU. It was announced yesterday, and his response, quote, "It's the greatest honor, I think, of any coaching award that anybody could ever receive because of who it was named after. I've always thought he was the best coach ever in college football. I still feel that way." He was asked about comparing teams, you know, this Bama team to another Bama team, this Bama team to LSU, or, I don't know, 72 USC. He was also asked to compare himself with Bear Bryant. Like, you're giving the guy the award and say, all right, now say you're better than the guy that the award's named after. He was asked that. He was asked about the comparisons between himself and Bear Bryant. Quote, "I don't think there should be a comparison, in all honesty. We have a great program here that benefits from everything Coach Bryant did, et cetera, et cetera." This is the tough part for him to answer. What do you think about the comparisons? Now, if he were being honest, room of truth, drop Nick Saban into the room of truth, get that Wonder Woman lasso, just do whatever you got to. I don't know. If you dropped him into the room of truth, Coach Saban, compare your resume with that of Bear Bryant. The truthful response is, yeah, I passed him. And even before I caught him, just in raw number of championships, I can't believe I'm saying this, even before he caught him, he had already achieved as much. Wait a minute. How could he have achieved this? Because it was way, 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 way harder. That's like six ways. Way harder to achieve the exact same outcome. The outcome is Bear Bryant, 1979 national champions. There's your outcome. Nick Saban, 2020, as coach of the team. 2020, national champion. It's the exact same outcome. But I promise you, what is that, 41 years later, for now 42 years later? It was way more difficult for Nick Saban to win any of his championships. It was way more difficult, way more difficult, way more for Nick Saban to win any of his championships than it was for Bear Bryant to win any of his, even his most difficult. Like, the easiest, quote, easiest championship Nick Saban won, it was far more difficult than the easiest path, box to wire. It was still more difficult for Nick Saban in modern times. So there is the first part of this. The other finalist, there were eight finalists. Tom Allen, who I'm a huge fan of, and I thought that he may wind up a little further south than Indiana, but he's still with the Hoosiers, assuming. What do we have? We have Marshall still open? I think Marshall's the only job open. Is that right? Matt Campbell, Jamie Shadwell, Mario Cristobal, Jimbo, Brian Kelly, and Dabo. So if you gave it to any of them, I would have said, yes, that's a guy who did enough this year. Yeah, I can see him being named Coach of the Year because I'll spin the wheel. Mario Cristobal, there are reasons you could identify that. Tom Allen, sure, all of them, every one of them. You could identify Nick Saban even more. Undefeated against everything going on in the world. So you know why he won it, and it's a big deal because he's at Alabama and Bear Bryant. But here's the tough part. If he compares and he says, oh, yeah, I've outpaced everything Bear's done, do you know what Nick Saban is saying? If he responds, well, yeah, I've compared it myself, and I've actually achieved way more than he ever did, you are saying, so the award should actually be the Nick Saban Coach of the Year Award. That's not a stretch, folks. Like, nobody is ever going to look at the Cy Young Award and go, oh, I achieved way more than he did. Do you know how many major league victories Cy Young has? I think it's 511. You get people in the Hall of Fame these days with 190? So, no matter how great, Bob Gibson or Steve Carlton or Roy Halladay, no matter how great those people are, no one ever said, hey, compare yourself to the guy whose name is on the plaque there. The Cy Young Award, you get a plaque. Compare yourself to the no, I don't want to do that. Why? Well, because he has four times as many victories as I do. Oh, yeah, that probably makes sense. Nick Saban? If the folks behind the Bear Bryant Award decided they wanted to change the name, it would be a little clunky, and it's a little awkward, and I've never been a fan of taking names off of stuff. The San Diego Chargers and the San Diego Padres used to play in San Diego Municipal Stadium. And then a guy who had been a sports writer for, 50 years out there, Jack Murphy. Jack Murphy Stadium, it was named after a San Diego sports writer that went back to, the Pacific Coast League days. Jack Murphy Stadium. And then somebody came, I don't know, it was a Qualcomm, came along and said, hey, we'll write a check. You know what the Chargers said? You know what? That guy, Jack Murphy, he wasn't nearly as good a sports writer as we thought. Pry that name off the side of this. Anyway, you know what? Overrated. We're Qualcomm. I've never been a fan of taking names off of things. But if you change the name, knock yourself out. I would absolutely get it because Saban is the best. Other news that involves Alabama. We know that Steve Sarkisian is now in Austin. He is the head coach. He has started working at the University of Texas as the head coach. He is set to hire away Kyle Flood, who did an amazing job. And honestly, you talk about career rehab? Go look at Kyle Flood and his exit from Rutgers. Wasn't so peachy. And then Kyle Flood showed up because he's a good football coach, and everybody did their job, and Alabama had the best offensive line in America. And so now Steve Sarkisian says, yeah, I want some of that at Texas. So Kyle Flood is set to join Steve Sarkisian at U of T, and also Alabama, which means that Nick Saban is not only looking for an offensive coordinator, more on that, but also an offensive line coach. As far as the OC, sources – and I, not my sources, Chris Lowe's sources, and Chris Lowe's got sources. Chris Lowe, senior writer for ESPN who covers the SEC, and I think he kind of runs the roundup of all the folks who, he guides their SEC coverage. Chris Lowe says he has sources that tell him Alabama is on the verge of hiring Bill O'Brien to be the new offensive coordinator. And if Chris Lowe says it, good enough for me. So, yes, we start the show today. All Alabama, all the time. You got a coach leaving. You might have a coordinator coming in. They still need to pick up a new guy for the offensive line. And Bear Bryant, the Bear Bryant Award now sits in the trophy case there in Tuscaloosa as well. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the season, talk a little more title game, and also take a peek ahead for some guys heading to the NFL draft. Coming up next, College Football Hall of Famer Joe Hamilton joins the Chuck Oliver Show, brought to you by Low T Nation.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.
The Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today. It's time for The Game Plan with College Football Hall of Famer Joe Hamilton.
Touchdown, Georgia Tech! Nobody throws a fade better than Joe Hamilton.
Presented by Low T Nation. Get your game plan ready for optimized health at lowtnation.com.
Everything that man just said is true. It is College Football Hall of Famer, Heisman finalist, Super Bowl champion, all that stuff. It is Joe Hamilton. Joe, how are you, brother?
I'm doing outstanding, Chuck. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I want to ask you about something I was just talking about before you got in here, and I believe the kids would say you're boys with this guy. Bill O'Brien is, according to sources, and Chris Lowe's got about as good a source as you can have, Bill O'Brien is finalizing a deal to be the new Alabama offensive coordinator. Now, I'm going to tell you, on a personal level, I really like Bill O'Brien, okay? I get along with him. He's always been really good to me. Now, this is going back 20-something years, you know, to when he was at Georgia Tech. He has a reputation. He does not get along with everybody. In fact, I witnessed him tell Tom Brady, of all people, basically, go screw yourself. I'm the coach. He said that to Tom Brady. Well, he's with a luminary just as the same level with Nick Saban. Tell me that there is a different side of Bill O'Brien, and tell me what you think that this pairing could equal for.
Yeah, I love Coach Billy O'Brien. He coached the running backs when I was at Georgia Tech, demanding, technique-oriented. He's very calm in the film room, but when you kind of make some mistakes on the practice field, he'll let you know, but he'll also get it corrected. What I worry about with him in Alabama, I don't know about his creativity. I don't know how innovative he is. When you're dealing with the Crimson Tide, now you're going to have the best wide receiver, two of the best wide receivers, the best tight end, the best running back, you know, the best quarterback. How are you going to allow all those guys to eat and stay happy? Can you design things up? I'll ask anybody, and my question is it going to look like the way it looked Monday night? And my answer to go back to what Coach O'Brien ran in Penn State, what he ran in Houston, what he ran when he was in New England, is not a lot of motions and shifts and pre-snap adjustments. So I'm kind of figuring out how's he going to allow all those playmakers to eat the ball or get fed in Alabama.
You know, and speaking of one of those guys, it could be Mac Jones. And I have an opinion. If a kid's a first-round pick, go get paid. All right. But also know from talking to people like you that, like an NFL field, that is not like learning on the job. There is nothing like trying to get up to speed on an NFL field. So Mac Jones, if he enters the draft, he's got a Mount Everest ahead of him, but he's going to be a first-round draft pick. I would tell him, come back for one more year because he started like 15, 16 games. Tell me what you see from Mac Jones as far as making the transition to the NFL.
Well, I see that he's NFL ready, no doubt about it, Chuck. And if it was 10 years ago, we would be talking about a top-5 pick. That's the skill set I see in Mac Jones, but because you're going to a lot of RPOs, the guys want a mobile, dynamic quarterback to be able to run the boots and the waggles, they're shifting him down a little bit. But did you see the blitz pickup that he orchestrated on Monday night in the national championship game? Did you see the free blitzer and he knew automatically where Najee Harris was in the flat, how he's scanning the field and throwing the ball to spaces that's wide open? That translates big time in the NFL. You just said to me, Chuck, that you would advise him to come back. And the reason why I disagree and wouldn't advise him to come back is because what is he going to improve on? And he's a guy that's maxed out already. He comes back next year, he's going to put up the same type numbers. You say, Mac Jones, I want you to work on your footwork. Well, he's not going to run 4.7, 4.8. He's going to be Mac Jones. He can get more pocket awareness, mm-hmm. but his upside is almost like Keith Adams. You remember Keith Adams from Clemson?
Yeah.
Keith kept coming back, you know, for 4 years at Clemson. I think he finally left maybe his junior year. But he was never going to be 6'1". He was never going to get taller. He was going to never improve on his skill set.
Remember John Abadi?
Yes.
Wake Forest?
Yes.
I talked to him because he redshirted at Wake, and he was real – he was candid about it, and I appreciated it. He's like – academically, I did not need to be at a place like Wake Forest. He said, so I had to redshirt and I got my books on track. And he says, so people ask me, do I want to come back and play my fifth year? He was like, he's 5'10". He's like, if I come back, if you tell me come back for 1 year, you'd be 6'2". He's like, Winston-Salem, here I come. I
totally agree. And that's why I don't think Mac Jones can improve on anything.
I saw a play the other night, and you talk about familiarity and having a young man that, you know, beyond his years. John Metchie's only a sophomore. And there was a play when you're talking about the blitz pickup. It came the other night. He went down, turned around, showed him his numbers, like, here I am. Here's the ball. You don't have that with a new quarterback. And so that's one of the things with Bryce Young, totally different skill set, basically didn't play this year, not a lot of familiarity with the guys who will be starting. I mean, that's its own bone to chew for Bill O'Brien and Bryce Young.
No doubt about it. And this is what I love about football. So Michi showed Mac Jones his numbers because he knew that Mac Jones knew where the hole in the zone was going to be, get the ball out of your hands. So now, Coach Billy O'Brien, next year, they're going to teach and hone in more so on the scramble drill. So now there might not be a hole in that little defensive zone, but he's going to be outside of the pocket when pressure comes. So now you're going to run to the sideline. The deepest comes short. The shortest go deep.
Work long.
And you're going to work on some of those things as opposed to having a quarterback that could beat you with his mind like Mac Jones. You're going to have a dynamic quarterback next year and a young quarterback that's not familiar with the offense. They're going to depend more on his legs early in the season. And by the time you get to game 10 and 11, you're going to see a lot of maturation going on with Mr. Young there.
Wrapping up with my friend Joe Hamilton. Last thing I want to ask you about, Joe, is Justin Fields. And I had an opinion the other night. I mean, like I said, you played the position. You took the hits. First time I saw him he got popped pretty good at the beginning of the game. I was like, I think he's got broken ribs. Like, and you're going to do that. If you're Ohio State, you're not going to tell the full extent of the injury or where it is because it's like putting a target on the kid. But he looked like he was fighting through it all night long, and I commend him for that. But I don't think he was right going into Monday's game.
No, he certainly was not right, Chuck. He wasn't at full speed. And there's a difference when you go through practice and you know you're injured. He didn't let one rip in practice. He didn't have to elude one defender in practice because he had on that jersey and they knew not to touch Justin Fields. So all of a sudden you come to the national championship game with energy and excitement all on that football field.
Yeah, and Dylan Moses not playing by those rules.
No, and then now you have to make a sudden move and see if you're healthy, and he realized, I don't have my stuff. The thing about Justin Fields, yes, he checks all the boxes. And I look at his arm strength. He has a big arm, but is that big arm accurate? I see him very accurate with the deep ball, but when those windows get a little tighter and you have to rope that sideline out, can you put it in a position to where you or your receiver can only catch it and it's outside? I question that a little bit about him with his intermediate accuracy, but other than that, I think he checks the boxes.
Yeah, and that was one thing. I think I said this maybe yesterday or maybe it was on Tuesday. I was remembering we were talking to Steve Young back in the day. And he said, because he's in both Hall of Fames, you know. And he said the big difference between college and pro, said college, he says, Chuck, everybody's open. He says in the NFL, nobody's open. He's like, and I was playing with Jerry Rice. He was like, you got to let it rip a second before he makes his cut.
Yes, and you have to trust him. And best believe he's going to go to the NFL with those receivers are going to tell him, I am open. When I look covered, I am open. Throw me that ball, and I'll make you look good.
Yeah, and, you know, the great quarterbacks, I've also heard the other side of this, that if they make the throw when you're not where you're supposed to be, they may never look at you again if you're a little further down that depth chart. Joe, I appreciate it, brother. Every single Thursday we
pleasure,
do this.
Chuck.
Joe Hamilton, College Football Hall of Famer. He is with us every single Thursday. It's brought to you by Low T Nation as we bounce around. During the regular season, it was a lot of the ACC, but also title game, draft, all of that coming up every Thursday with Joe Hamilton.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I've got to tell you some things, folks. Not out of like anger or anything, but I stay away from social media. I was on Facebook for about 15 minutes back in 2010, and I realized I what am I doing here? What? Hey, I was on Facebook last night. Oh yeah, but what were you doing on Facebook? Instagram, the endless pursuit of likes and favorites and views, and I despise it all. I think it's really unhealthy as well. However. My Twitter account, I mean, I only follow about 40 people, and I just, because I want positivity, I want good information, whatever. Last week, I think I clicked follow for the first time in maybe a year, and I clicked follow NCAA Transfer Portal. It's at Rivals Portal. Folks, it's like an actual reality TV program. I mean, by the minute, seeing kids jump in, get offers, it's been fascinating stuff. Like, actual reality TV wouldn't get ratings. All right, we got Chuck Oliver, reality TV. Oh, there's Chuck getting a sandwich. Oh, now Chuck's watching TV. See, reality TV would suck. This? It's unbelievable. Want to welcome on now from Rivals, as a matter of fact, it is Woody Womack. Woody, welcome back, man. How you been? Been a minute.
Oh, I've been great, Chuck. Yeah, man. I guess the big problem is nap time comes shortly after the show ends, and so it's chaotic around here during the pandemic, trying to be Mr. Mom and do my job and fit in the schedule. So it's been rough.
Let's talk about the transfer portal, because, like I said, I followed Rivals Portal, and I mean it ain't even like Christmas where you got to wait around for it to get there. It is every 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. You've got ballplayers jumping in, jumping out, getting offers, et cetera. Just talk about the acceleration, the velocity of the transfer portal, what it is right now versus even, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, we've kind of got a perfect storm right now because you've got an entire class of seniors who was given an extra year of eligibility. You've got FCS guys who didn't have a season and still don't really know if they're going to have this spring season. You've got teams who didn't sign full classes because they couldn't go out and evaluate people in person or have camps over the summer. So it's kind of just madness. It's guys trying to find new homes. It's people who are unhappy. It's some players just want to get back closer to home because they've been away from their families, haven't been able to see them at all for months. And so all of it's coming together. And like you said, every day, I mean, we have somebody monitoring the portal basically. You have to refresh it every time. That's the thing. There's no notification. It's refresh, log in over and over and over again and try to break the news. And that's what that account's been for. It's really grown exponentially. People seem to love it. So I'm glad you're on board, too.
And Woody, let me just ask you for clarification, because my understanding is the expected approval from the NCAA of a one-time no-penalty transfer for all Division I athletes, that was kind of expected, and they tabled it, didn't they?
Yeah, they're kind of kicking the can down the road with that and the name image like this. So, I mean, everyone thinks it's still going to come, but with the NCAA, you never really know. So a lot of these guys, you know, are supposed to be eligible next season, and unless they're grad transfers, you know, it could be the case that they're not. So I think everyone's kind of rolling the dice a little bit, especially taking a leap of faith. But, you know, I guess we'll see. I still think it's going to pass, but the fact that it didn't go down like it was supposed to over the last month here, it should make some people a little nervous.
And so help me flesh this out a little bit, because that's what I'm asking for. I mean, you know, I don't have eligibility. You don't either. We're not in the portal. It's not necessarily going to affect our daily lives. But for a lot of these kids, you know, I'm transferring from, you know, a good program at a giant school, and I think I'm going to a new program. But it turns out, you know, I get word from the NCAA this coming summer that I can't play this year. I don't think a lot, and in fact, Woody, I would say it's impossible given the number of kids who are deciding to portal. They're not thinking this through, and they may not even be aware that they don't have the one-time exception.
Right. I don't think I think most of them are assuming they're going to have it, and that's why they're making the decision. I just can't imagine. You know, the NCAA did hold up some people this fall. Like, there were some people who transferred in, especially from like Big Ten and Pac-12 schools. There were guys who transferred in August to schools that were playing, and they didn't get approved right away. So, like, you saw some guys go – I think you saw a guy go from Georgia to UCF, and he wasn't eligible all season to play until the bowl game, when they did a blanket waiver for all the people who had already transferred. So, it's definitely nerve-wracking. The one thing is, and one thing I don't think people talk about enough, and I see this with people responding to the portal and tagging their coaches, and a lot of these kids know where they're going before they even enter. So you've got the case of the highest profile people, they're already, it's quick and done. Like, you know, like Wanya Morris from Tennessee, like one of a top 100 recruit, played for them for 2 years. He enters the portal and people are like, ooh, where is he going to go? It's like, chances are it's already a done deal for him to head to Oklahoma, and he knew that when he entered.
Or Rambo to Miami.
Right. It was done. It was done before he ever entered. Now, that brings into play, you know, what about tampering? You know, what are schools tampering? I think they're using third parties, but I think there could be some ramifications on that front down the road as well.
Tanner and Woody Womack again from Rivals. Get him on Twitter, at RivalsWoody. I don't have the percentages in front of me. Maybe you do. But the first year of the early signing period, like, we were like 2 hours into that day, and I was like, all right, we're going to stop using the word early. This is just going to be the signing period, the 3 days in December. And I saw the number of the blue chip recruits. It was, like, I don't know, 70%, and then it was 72% the next year. It's gone up every year. And if you look at the recruiting list right now, I mean, there ain't no Zach Evans out there hanging around till May to decide where he wants to go. It looks like this year's recruiting class got picked clean in December.
Yeah, it's pretty much done. And it's because there's no, you know, some of these guys, especially once you make deep playoff runs, some of them want to hold out to take visits. And some kids did hold out to commit, hoping that they would be able to take visits. But with no visits being allowed by the NCAA in January, or basically any month since last March, I think a lot of kids are like, okay, let's wrap it up. So the combination of the pandemic with the early signing period definitely took a lot more big names out of the mix. And it's just been such an odd year for recruiting. We're really going to find out, Chuck, which coaches can truly evaluate, because they didn't see these guys in camp. They didn't go get to watch them play in person their senior season. And a lot of people took commits in the spring thinking, oh yeah, we'll see them later and give them a once over before we decide to take them. Well, now they didn't have that chance. So chances are we're going to miss on some people. There's going to be a lot of three stars that end up outplaying their ranking. And I think a lot of coaches might end up, you know, taking some guys that they didn't really end up wanting, or maybe shouldn't have had a spot at that school.
If we look at Ole Miss in particular, and, you know, you have a case like Lane Kiffin last year. The reason I want to ask you is he said, well, I got hired late, and we've got plenty of scholarships, but you know what? I'd rather hold back 5, 6, 7 scholarships, you know, for the next class, because I just don't want to hand them out to two stars just to use them. Did that strategy – he didn't know about the pandemic. Did that strategy wind up paying off, do you believe, for Ole Miss?
It did. I mean, you look at some of the players they were able to add. They have a pretty good class. They did use some of those guys on transfers late. I think their tight end came from Temple.
Yeah.
And he was one of the best tight ends in the SEC, really. This year's class, they did a good job. I mean, he's still tapping down into Florida. They got 25 commits. And if you look around at where they went, I mean, they dipped down into Texas. They stole Hudson Wolf, who we have as one of the top tight ends in the country. They took him from Tennessee like a week before signing day. So him going all over, he's got a brand. I mean, you know, Lane Kiffin is the brand more so than Ole Miss, especially when you talk about guys from outside of the area. And I think I just think with the way their offense looked, I mean, you saw them, they stole Florida State's quarterback commit to Luke Altmyer, who was an in-state kid. The way that offense looks, a lot of guys are going to be lining up to go play there, especially when you start to see guys like, you know, Elijah Moore has been talked about as a first-round pick. That's going to continue to pay off for them.
Last program I want to ask you about, and it was already, you know, trending poorly before the coaching change. Auburn, they don't get top-ranked recruiting classes. They're not top three, top five. They usually live around that 9, 10, 11 range, and they were living like in the 40s. It was a small early class for Harsin. Well, what winds up being Harsin. Where do you think he goes from here, and what's his strategy heading towards the first week of February?
Well, it's really like a bad situation for them because, you know, we're seeing players jump into the portal almost daily from Auburn. We saw one of their defensive linemen just committed to Florida today.
Yeah, Newkirk.
Right. So they lose him. They lose guys like him. They lost Big Cat Bryant.
It's three running backs.
Right, they lost, exactly. They lost their running backs. And when you see the players go, like when a player goes to Florida, that's a bad sign if you're Auburn. If he goes to Georgia Southern, you're like, okay, he's probably going to play anyway. But that hurts. So they only got 12 commits. And there's a few guys floating around out there. But, I mean, this is tough. And this is what makes it hard for these new coaches. It's almost like a year zero. Because they don't have a first recruiting class. So, you know, 3 years from now, 2 years from now, they're going to be like, that's year three. Why isn't he better? And it's like, well, he basically had no recruiting class his first year. So I think they're going to try to pick and choose and maybe try to get that number closer to 18 commits. But they're going to be trying to go out and add some transfers themselves. And luckily the staff he's hired has a lot of connections. So maybe they can find some guys. But I think they're in a really tough spot.
Last guy I want to ask you about, and specifically with Auburn, Rodney Garner out, Tracy Rocker in. Rodney Garner, good guy, good coach, great recruiter, good guy, good coach. But honestly, Rodney was making bank because of getting signatures. I mean, he was one of the best by reputation. Is that reputation like? Has he been doing heavy lifting on the recruiting trail the past couple of years? And what will become of him? Because I mean, somebody will employ him, absolutely.
Yeah, he has. I mean, look, he had Derrick Brown last year that was a first-round pick. He had Marlon Davidson who went really high. I mean, I have a feeling that I think if Tennessee could hire him, I think they would right now. I think the problem is they're, you know, Pruitt is handcuffed with what's going on with that internal investigation and stuff.
Yep.
But, I mean, someone's going to hire this dude. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, land somewhere pretty quickly. There's still a few more seats to shuffle around, and someone might just make a spot for him. You know, he's too good of a coach to. And I sort of wonder, like, I don't know what happened with Harsin. Maybe they wanted a clean house. Maybe he thought the D line didn't play well last year. But it just seems weird to let a guy like that walk. It's almost like the D line coach down at Florida State. They've been through three or four coaches. Yeah, Odo Higgins. They've been through three or four coaches, and guess what? He's there every time. You know,
yeah, like, he comes with the furniture. He's there.
Right. He's not the problem. And I don't think Rodney Garner is the problem personally. But, you know, Tracy Rocker has been a good coach in the past. He didn't work out too well at Tennessee. But, you know, maybe he steps right in. But I just thought it was surprising to see him not retained.
What is the – because my understanding is the reason Tracy Rocker got exited from Athens was because he missed on, like, among Derrick Brown, I think it was Aubrey Solomon. What is Auburn getting in a recruiter from Tracy Rocker?
he could still recruit. He did miss on those guys. He did miss on that. Solomon seemed to be the one that, like, broke the camel's back.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In retrospect, I mean, was that big of a loss? I'm not really. So you can't – I don't think you could fire a coach over losing one recruit, but I still think he can go out and recruit. He still has a ton of relationships. I mean, that's the thing with these guys who shuffle around from SEC school to mm-hmm. SEC school. They still know the people they need to know. And a guy like him is still going to find out about Aubrey Solomon of the world two years before anyone else, some kid who's down there in South Georgia that we might not necessarily know about. So I think that I think he has a good chance to still be able to recruit and coach well. And I don't think it's that big of a drop-off from Garner. I just, like I said, I'm just surprised.
Yeah, me as well. Wood, it's always great, man. I appreciate you carving out some time, brother.
All right, no problem. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Woody Womack from Rivals. The way it was put to me, because I asked about Tracy getting fired as well, and I'm talking about from Athens. The way it was put to me was, check back in a couple of years. And I was like, you mean like how the kids develop and who the replacement, who the new coach is? He's like, no. He's kind of laughing. And he said, Kirby fired Tracy? I bet you won't have to fire anybody else. If you've got a good enough coach and a good enough recruiter who is, in your view, replaceable, and again, in your view, has sort of singled himself out, miss. At what he said, you're really going to fire a guy from missing on a five-star defensive tackle? A five-star defensive lineman, take quarterback out as always, five-star defensive lineman, they're just not out there, man. And so that means we got to get him. That means everybody is trying to get him. Which, when Georgia lost to Aubrey Solomon, again, I don't know how good a ball player he is, but he went to Michigan because Michigan wanted him. Hey, we're going to South Georgia. Why? Five-star D lineman. Oh, okay, Jim, that makes sense. And winds up transferring to Tennessee. Why? Five-star defensive line. Everybody wanted him. So that is a tough, tough gig if you're going to get canned because you specifically – like, if you did sign him, that means there might be like 30 other defensive line coaches. They get fired. But it wasn't just that. It was check back in 2 years. Why? Bet he doesn't have to fire anybody else. And I don't think Kirby did. I mean, there was some other shuffling on the staff, and when they added the 10th assistant, I think he brought in, like, Scott Fountain, maybe. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But, I mean, I don't remember Kirby, at least not publicly, you know, where everybody understood what was going on. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up Hour 1.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
We want to define what things our players do at a very high level, and we want to amplify that. We want to adjust it, keep changing it so people can't set their watch to what we're doing and how we're doing it, and we want to involve everybody.
Happy Jake Peets. He is the new LSU offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, etc. Basically, he is the new younger, didn't graduate from LSU version of Steve Ensminger, right? He's basically taken over Ensminger. Ensminger retired now? Like, has he decided to move off into the sunset?
I mean, semi. I believe he's still going to do some off-field, hey, I'll look at film, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. I guess he's earned it. Anybody has. You know, you work 30 years, you're supposed to have earned it. And he's actually worked a little bit more than that. So Jake Peets says, yeah, we're going to be different. It's not going to be cookie cutter. It's not going to be just same old, where honestly, there was a time when LSU's offense was same old, and then LSU's offense was almost Jurassic in its approach. And then 2019 happened. I was like, oh. And I think I actually saw the toss dive one time during 2009. But anyway, Jake Peets talking about it ain't going to be the same. Dan Matthews, how are you?
Yeah, there is more than the rules on the side of the refrigerator down in Baton Rouge. I think inside the offensive coaching room, there is a Ten Commandments. And at number one, it is thou shalt not toss dive ever again.
Oh, awesome.
Oh,
good.
My God. Yeah. I mean, especially the Florida ending at the goal line is the one. LSU.
Yeah, back in 16.
In recent memory, LSU at the goal line, it's not gone so well for them at times. So I'm sorry to bring up really bad memories down in Baton Rouge. Chuck, I want to indulge you and the audience in a quick story here before I make my point, and that is I have an uncle of mine who years ago, when he was a young kid, used to work at a restaurant, and they sent one of the bussers up into the attic at the restaurant, and the attic had these like wooden beams that you had to like kind of stand on and balance yourself on, or yep, you're falling right through. Well, there's the dinner rush. They've got a crowd there. And, hey, you know, will you go up into the roof? And, yep, there he is and loses his balance a little bit. Legs right through the ceiling. And, of course, there's a lady. Ah! The manager calmly looks to somebody else and says, "Will you get the Bissell, please?" In this case, Nick Saban is the manager, and some people would say that the busser are the coaches who are leaving, and of course, some Bama fans are saying, ah, this is crazy, we can't have this right now. What is Nick Saban thinking with his coaching staff being pillaged? Nick Saban calmly looks to somebody and says, instead of a Bissell, go get the binder, please. Because there is no real coincidence that immediately after the news, Steve Sarkisian to Texas, Bill O'Brien. Now also, too, with Kyle Flood sounding like he's going to Texas. Already his replacement, and it sounds like another replacement will be needed if indeed the reports are true about Jeff Banks. I saw one that I have not seen confirmed about Pete Golding. We'll see what happens with that. But that's one thing that I want to tell Bama fans to continue to calm themselves, and not only them, but to also remind the rest of college football is, yes, Nick Saban is going to lose coaches, but immediately after that happens, he looks to his assistant and says, get the binder, please.
Yeah, I would actually think it would be even easier than that. You're right, by the way. There is no panic from Nick Saban. I'm losing a right choice. I'll come up with another right choice. Even when you bring in a guy, again, like Kyle Flood, it's like, whoa, do you see how he exited Rutgers? I'm aware, trust me. I'm also aware how he coaches offensive line. I used to work, my first job in the industry was at a giant like FM signal, WSDR, and Star 94. And back in this 20 years ago, they had a morning show, Steve and Vicky in the mornings, a license to print money. In fact, the salespeople there, I asked one of them one time, I was like, how difficult is it to sell Steve and Vicky? And she said, I show up in the morning, the phone's ringing. I pick it up. Hi, how much would you like to buy? Because in a market with like 26 stations, they were getting a 15 share. I don't think Nick Saban says, hey, somebody get my binder. I think when Nick Saban, it's going to be public now. We have an opening on the staff. I think he says, somebody turn on my cell phone. I think that is the extent of now they'll have a search firm and they'll get background checks and they'll make sure that, you know, you're not hiring the receivers coach from Ohio State. You know, they're going to do all of the due diligence. And if you think about it, most of these assistant coaches, their missteps and transgressions, they are in the rearview mirror. They don't happen in Tuscaloosa. I don't think it is even. It's somebody turn on my cell phone. And when he turns it on, it starts ringing.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.